Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is 11 minutes after 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. We kick off the first hour of the show with the Roundtable panel. It's an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's a Trump-free Tuesday today. Trump is not on the schedule of topics. We don't bring him up. We won't bother talking about him. If, in fact, somebody talks about Trump, you know one of our panelists has gone rogue. And our panelist today, we'll start with publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld. Hi, Ira.
Good morning. I have nothing but Trump material, so this is the last you'll hear from me for about the next 40 minutes.
And Ray, to be fair, you started it.
That didn't take long. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union, the premier paper of the Albany area since the Nick News closed shop. Mike, welcome back to the program.
I'm happy to be here, and I won't be politically incorrect and bring up the name of the New York City real estate magnate you referred to.
That's right. It is a Trump-free Tuesday on the Roundtable. And then there's Alan Shartok, who is our bon vivant, man about town.
Bon vivant.
And generally speaking, the head cheese around here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
You know, it's nice to be here. This is the first roundtable I have hosted in Studio X, as we're calling it.
Oh, yeah, Studio X.
I got to tell you, what a bleak, cavernous, annoying place. It's like where the Beatles filmed Let It Be. Yeah. It's just this dark and drab place conducive to the disintegration of a group.
I actually love it.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I like differences, and Pat Cooney and his wonderful engineering crack group set the whole thing up, and there's stuff on the walls, and then it's very intimate in here. It's sort of a little different, and I love it.
Okay.
I think this is because you're essentially sitting exactly where you sit during the fund drive. And although you're in, you're facing each other on the other side, and I just think this brings back the fun drive for you, Ray. And you're saying, I spend enough time in here for the fun drive. Why
PTSD.
Do I have to spend more?
Thanks. Yeah, you're right. It does bring back some difficult memories. That's a good point. So in the news today, and this has been going on now for a couple of days, a St. Louis County police spokesman says about 24 people were arrested during a protest in Ferguson last night. Officer Sean McGuire said early today that approximately 23 arrests were made, although police were still confirming official totals. Hundreds of people gathered along the thoroughfare that was the site of massive protests and rioting after 18-year-old Michael Brown was fatally shot last year in a confrontation with a Ferguson police officer. The crowd marched, chanted, and at times confronted police. McGuire says several bottles, frozen water bottles, and rocks were thrown at officers throughout the night. He says no one was injured. And, you know, it doesn't seem like this story will be going away anytime soon.
Well, it's an interesting point you make. This morning on my early commentary, Ray, I said, look, the police are in a bad spot here. If somebody starts shooting, what are you supposed to do? Not arrest them? If somebody throws frozen water bottles or Molotov cocktails or anything like that, look, people in minority communities need to be protected too. And they make that very clear. One of the worst parts of racism in this country is that we protect the people maybe a little bit more on Park Avenue than we do above 116th Street. I'm very sympathetic to what police have to face, even though I think there are rogue policemen who deserve to be, you know, to be hauled in too. So I see this as a very difficult situation for police.
I don't know that there's any indication, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the protesters, those who have caused the trouble and those who created the gunfire the first night, are people who went there to legitimately protest the issue. In other words, it just sounds to me, and from what all I've read, is that you have agitators, whether or not they're from outside the area, is meaningless. It's just that these are people who are up to no good and are using this.
You don't mean all of them, do you?
No, I'm talking about the ones who, the protesters, it's been said, were mainly peaceful. I mean, from what I've read, under the time flies category, I didn't realize it had been a full year since Ferguson erupted. And in the intervening months, Ferguson has slowly seemed to come back, and they have new people in charge, and there are more black people who are in authority, and so the community had been seemingly peaceful, and now this erupts after, as an adjunct to the protest, and it says to me that there were just people out there, not the protesters, who were looking to create mayhem, and that's really the shame of all of this.
Well, I think the question is whether this is a strategy that's effective or counterproductive. After the many protests in Ferguson a year ago, and the way that police responded to it, which was pretty menacing, you think
last year,
yeah. That's correct, last year.
After the first night, remember, they let everything burn.
That's right.
That's correct. But I mean, you can look back and whatever, the result was a conversation nationally about the way that police handle treatment of minorities and how they behave in minority communities. And that began a national conversation. As you said, Ira, a lot happened in Ferguson. It isn't like it's perfect, but a lot happened. And now this one element is trying to propel this forward by instigating violence. And I think it's actually hurting the effort of the many, many, many who came to peacefully protest.
Well, I remember the peace marches back in the day. Mm-hmm. And the peace marches and the civil rights marches that we'd go to Washington, we'd go here and there. There were always marshals appointed by the organization that were running things to make sure that the few infiltrators or the people who wanted to cause as much trouble as they possibly could or to make something violent were curtailed. And because we know that this is a golden opportunity for such folks to get out and do their mischief.
I wonder if the difference or a difference is not only it may be that there are no marshals serving that function, but the other difference, and a big difference, would be the availability of guns.
Guns, sure. You're right.
It's the Roundtable panel on WAMC. Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain, Ira Fussfeld, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Mike Spain in the Times Union. A very interesting piece that sort of dovetails with what we're discussing today. And this is activists to Albany DA bring charges in Ivy death and say teen's prison term is excessive. And civic organizations and criminal justice advocates rallied outside the Albany County Judicial Center yesterday to call on David Soares to take more action in two high-profile cases.
Yeah, these activists came out to urge the district attorney, the Albany County District Attorney David Soares, to step up the investigation or maybe be more visible and vocal on the investigation of the death of an Albany resident, Donald Dante Ivy, back in April. He was in a confrontation late at night with three Albany police officers. They used a taser to subdue him and take him into custody. And he subsequently died of heart failure, cardiac arrest, I believe. And these protesters want the district attorney to speak out about it. They'd like to see the officers investigated. Some say they ought to be indicted. And the district attorney is also under pressure from a group in the community, or maybe some of the same people, to discuss the sentencing of a 16-year-old who was charged in a robbery. Marquis Dixon was sentenced to 9 years in prison, and many think that was much too harsh. He was stealing sneakers. One of our columnists—
At gunpoint,
yes. Well, that's interesting you say that.
Well, it's important.
It is very important, and that some people are saying they're questioning whether it was at gunpoint. Some of his supporters say that he didn't display a gun. The person who he robbed the sneakers from took the sneakers from under force and assaulted, say that he displayed a gun, and some are questioning that. Well, whatever the case may be, the district attorney did speak about it. He said that there was a armed assault, and that sentence was appropriate to that action.
And a week or two ago on the Capitol Connection, Alan interviewed DA David Soares, and he spoke about this. Mr. Hopper, do you have that cut? Let's hear it.
Well, that's an interesting case because it's a case that was prosecuted by my office, and I think the way that the facts of that case has been projected in the local paper is really doing a disservice to not only the police in this case, the prosecutors, but it does a disservice to that judge, as well as the jury who sat and heard the facts of this case. When a young man decides to lure a person on the internet under the guise of a transaction, and that person lures that individual to a parking lot and then robs that person of a pair of sneakers.
At gunpoint.
At gunpoint.
Yes.
You know, this is the tough on crime stance that I promised people, you know, when I ran for office. And the idea now that we're going to characterize the evidence as flimsy or characterize it in a way that really makes it look like prosecutors, police, a judge, and 12 citizens of this county did something nefarious to me is a bit offensive. But, you know, the one thing that I am particularly glad to see is that there is such a level of activism around. I think it's the wrong case that we have this level of activism around, but I am very happy to see that Albany County has managed to come together and decide that they want some reform in criminal justice. I believe that there should be reform in criminal justice, but I don't believe that that reform starts with allowing young people with weapons to be robbing other people and then making decisions about sentences based upon what the bounty of that robbery was. So if it wasn't a pair of sneakers, but it was $1,000, would the sentence be more appropriate? If a bank robber decides to go rob a bank on a Tuesday and he finds, you know, $10 there, should we be lighter on a sentence than if he had robbed it on a Friday and found $1 million? The fact of the matter is that we have a number of young African-American and young men of color in our community that are going to prison. That is a travesty. But what the travesty truly is that there aren't more options for those young people prior to that decision point to go and rob someone.
That is District Attorney David Soares of Albany County speaking on WAMC's Capital Connection program. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Forgot to give you the email address, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Since he referenced the local paper, Times Union's Mike Spain, I'll give you first shot here.
Well, he repeated many of those same comments in his statement released. Mr. Soares released a statement yesterday after the protests at the Albany County Justice Center. And like I said earlier, there is, in spite of the finding of the court, there's people who disbelieve that this young man, Mr. Dixon, had displayed a weapon. I have no idea. I wasn't there. I don't know all the details of it. But in any event, people are regarding that as an injustice. And one of the things they're using it for is to promote a bill that's been stalled in the state legislature that would give New York a better flexibility, more flexibility in handling of crimes charged against 16 and 17-year-olds. New York is only one of two states that charges teenagers as adults from age 16 and 17. All the other states except North Carolina have a program that a lot would like to see in New York. And this is, whether this case outcome would be any different, I don't know, because if it was an armed assault, that may have eluded that framework for what this new bill would allow. But it does, as the district attorney, I think, said, it talk about the tragedy of so many young people that are sent off to prison and their lives are destroyed. And everybody agrees that that's a terrible mistake.
We are overdue. My bad. We are overdue for a break. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back. It's the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Style Fabrics, Route 28, Kingston, offering a complete line of FAF sewing, embroidery, and quilting machines, plus service and repair of all other sewing machine brands. Style-Fabrics.com. Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Abstraction, an exhibit of paintings, photographs, and sculpture through August 23rd. Open daily 11 to 5, CarrieHaddadGallery.com. And Baba Louise, Pittsfield, Great Barrington, and Hudson, New York, featuring Lasagna Night every Monday with salad and a basket of bread. BabaLouisePizza.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:25 on a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, joined today by Alan Shartok, Mike Spain of the Times Union, and publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld. Once again, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable at WAMC.org if you want to weigh in.
Well, speaking of weighing in, there's a letter from Ruth who says, panelists express surprise at the discontent, anger, and violence in Ferguson. I think that's going a little too far, but okay. I wonder if you have read the Justice Department's report on the Ferguson Police Department. Investigators found it to be steeped in a culture of racism. This structural and endemic racism does not vanish with a change in leadership or the addition of a few black faces, and that's from Ruth. You know, I don't know how to respond to that other than to say I think your characterization of the discontent, anger, and violence in Ferguson. Nobody here said that it wasn't appropriate to remember this event or to protest. In fact, I think quite the opposite. What we talked about was one or two people who decided that it would be appropriate to use a gun or to do violence. And I think there's a big difference between what you say and what we said.
Now, to be clear, the facts of that gunfire from two nights ago, not entirely clear
That's
at
right.
this time.
That's right. But all of the reports say from the periphery of the protest. That's what they say. They didn't say it was five blocks away. They say the reports say from the periphery of the protest.
Well, all it does, and even the previous case we talked about in Albany does, is underscore that the public, a big segment of the public, and primarily perhaps in the minority community, do not trust the assertions made by police, even when they are backed up. If there's not a videotape
sure.
and it's word against word, there's a distrust of the system when a predominantly white police department is involved in an incident where a minority dies, especially an unarmed minority. In this case, a guy is in critical condition and he had a weapon.
Right.
You know, that's the assertion. But people don't believe all the assertions made by authorities
sure.
anymore. They've lost their credibility. And that's why the governor of New York has assigned the attorney general to given him authority to look into cases where unarmed citizens die in confrontations with police or whether they die in police custody. And that just demonstrates that, you know, there is a credibility issue.
The governor is taking great credit for having done this and saying that this will be a model, you know, for the rest of the nation. However, you will remember that the attorney general asked for this power early on and didn't get it.
He was trying to do it with legislation. He was trying to get the Senate and the Assembly, and the Assembly went along, but the Senate stalled it. They wouldn't give the Attorney General or authorize some other system where an oversight board or a special designated prosecutor would come in these particular thorny cases.
Yeah, well, you're right about one thing, and that is that it has not been unknown for police to plant a gun on somebody.
And we're not saying that this happened in any of these cases.
No, we are certainly not.
It's just that there is a distrust, and that's a big issue.
It's the Roundtable on WAMC. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We're joined today by Ira Fussfeld, who's been strangely silent today.
I told you I had all this material on Trump.
It's a Trump-free Tuesday.
It's a Trump-free Tuesday.
Yeah, so you're going to have to save that for Wednesday.
Yes, I thought I'd try something different and not say something if I didn't really know anything.
Really?
Yeah, so once in a while I'll do that, and Mike and Alan were much better versed in the SOAR's discussion than am I.
Okay, well, I mean, why start now?
No, that's my point.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Well, we have
By the way, just so you'll know, very quickly.
Yeah, we have about 30 seconds.
Okay, then we'll do it when we come back. We had a letter from Justin taking us to task.
Oh, for Pete's sake. All right, Justin, you'll be next. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable from cavernous, dark, and depressing Studio X, your temporary studio.
Not true.
No?
No.
It's nice and bright and sunny?
Yes.
Okay.
Here, let me sign this check.
It's the Roundtable panel. WAMC's Alan Shartok, that's him. Associate Editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and Publisher Emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Before we went to break, Alan, you said Justin was going to take us to task.
Indeed.
So go ahead.
In your piece on Marky Dixon, Alan has said at least twice that the robbery occurred at gunpoint. There's no evidence of this other than the accusation, as far as I know, that the accusation was that Dixon lifted up his shirt to show he had a gun. When you repeatedly say the robbery occurred at gunpoint, you're distorting the facts. Well, Justin, if you just listen to the DA, not according to the 12 people who heard the case, not according to the district attorney, not according to the police.
Yeah, I think he made a point, and we played the audio cut from the Capitol Connection in the first half of this hour, that, you know, there are many, in David Soares' words, and paraphrasing here, there are many cases with which activists could be have a really strong, loud case. This, in his mind, is not one of them.
We also heard from Bernard Klein, who said, please talk about Senator Chuck Schumer and his decision in regard to the Iran deal. Thank you. Bernie from Woodburn.
I saw a tweet. I was up on vacation for the last couple of weeks, and I saw a tweet from Ira. And, well, explain that.
Well, I retweeted the New York Times editorial, which called it a bad decision. When I was on this program on Friday, I called Schumer a coward because of the way and the timing that the announcement was made. I mean, if we can argue, and I would argue he's made the bad decision in siding with against Obama on this, but I was particularly upset by the fact that the word came out at roughly 9 or 10 o'clock on the night that the Republicans were drawing 24 million people. And it was, you know, this from a guy who has never shied away from being in front of a microphone.
Well, nobody ever
camera.
Said he wasn't smart.
Well, but now the only asterisk now, because and I prefaced that coward allegation with, I apologize to Schumer if there's something here I'm not aware of. Now, in subsequent days, we've heard that Schumer informed Obama on that Thursday night, and it was not supposed to be released until Friday, and it was leaked on Thursday night, presumably by the Obama people.
Really?
Yeah. Now, that said, until yesterday, now we're talking about 3 or 4 days beyond that, Schumer had still not appeared in front of a camera to discuss this. And he did so yesterday at another event somewhere in a waterfront setting because there were all some marina and boats behind him. Very uncharacteristic. I don't believe this Sunday, for one of the rare times, he did not have a Sunday Schumer press conference about something of usually less than major import. So I'm going to back off from saying coward because that may be too strong, but I'm still not pleased by the way Schumer not only has made the decision that he made, but how poorly he has explained it. Because it just, at the end of the day, seems to me to be more politics than morals here.
I'm sorry, Mike.
No, go right ahead, Alan. I was wondering if you thought it would interfere with his effort to become the Senate
majority leader. Well, that's what it's all about. First, you have to be reelected, and he has to be reelected this year. And a huge majority of this state, is against the Iran deal. Okay, so he holds his finger up in the air and he sees which way the wind is blowing. He is nothing if not smart. And he says, look, this is the toughest decision. I remember when he showed up, he asked us to explain his vote on the Iraq incursion at the Linda Norris Auditorium. Remember that, Ray? Mm-hmm. He asked, he came. And there were all kinds of people. I remember one guy who was so furious with him that when I told him we were going to ask people to write down their comments on the cards and read the cards, he threw a cup of burning coffee on me.
I remember that.
Yes, and the police all came and the rest of it. But he was gutsy. He showed up and he said, I have to say, tell this one more time. He showed up and the first thing he said when he walked in is, where's the peacenik who threw the burning coffee on him? So you know, he's pretty gutsy about it. I don't agree with his decision. I don't. But on the other hand, I understand it.
Well, the other thing I said the other day was I believe that they would have counted votes, and I think he is looking to have a what would seem to be a principled position, but
knowing
that it's going to pass, that he does so, he can have it both ways.
And in fact, the tip off there, I believe, was his Senator Gillibrand's, going the other way.
Right.
I'm sure there's been a conversation there.
Yeah, and the other point to Mike's question about whether it might harm him going forward regarding being majority or minority leader, whichever controls the Senate, is it's been pointed out that in Schumer's current position, he was largely responsible for, through his work and efforts, in getting a number of senators elected, Democratic senators elected. And so he believes that it is believed that there are enough people who owe him that he will survive that.
I'm curious. I was on vacation, didn't see the article in the New York Times. Why did they call his decision cowardly?
No. I called the way it was announced cowardly.
Okay.
The New York Times editorial, with which I agree, said that his decision was not a good one. I think Alan said he too believes that the deal with Iran should be approved, and as did the New York Times, and that was they were criticizing Schumer for going the other way.
And people who are for the deal are very angry at Schumer for having done
including
this.
Including some Jewish groups.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no question. I think you're Jewish, aren't you?
Yes.
I'm Jewish.
You won't see my picture next to Jewish in the dictionary, but I am Jewish.
Yeah, no, you're a very good Jewish person.
I like
fine. How about you, Mike?
I'm a good Catholic Jewish person.
Oh, yes, a couple of Catholics, a couple of Jews. It's a good roundtable panel today.
And they all walked into a bar.
Ba-dum-bum.
The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We do have a letter.
We do. I like Schumer, Amy Schumer.
Can't
blame her for Cousin Chuck, the neocon, and then he uses a word which we do not use on this radio station because it's just inappropriate. Seriously, he should not become Senate Democratic leader and should be primaried for a Senate seat. How about Senator Zephyr Teachout?
Well, you can see where they're coming from.
Yes, you can. And Tom says, I think Chuck wants to retire back to his apartment in Park Slope and make Gillibrand the senior senator from New York State. He certainly doesn't want to be reelected. No, on the contrary, Tom.
I do disagree.
He wants to be reelected. Yeah. You're just dead wrong.
How old is Chuck Schumer?
61, maybe? We can look it up.
In that age.
Fairly young man.
He's a fairly young man.
Yeah. Okay. And then, let's see here. We heard from... Oh, yeah, we did that one
okay.
already. And James says, question on giving state attorney general the power to investigate deaths at police hands. How was Governor Cuomo able to do with an executive order what could not be done through legislation? Well, he did it.
With executive power.
Yeah, he can. And the governor can make these assignments, as he did, remember, with the famous Moreland Act Commission, in which he appointed the attorney general, a co-convener of the Moreland Act, and therefore made them eligible to investigate legislators as well as people just in the executive branch.
Whatever happened to that?
Well, yes, what did happen?
Yeah, and the New York State Legislature is a picture of purity now.
No question.
Well, if you're scoring at home, it's been three shows since Alan has mentioned the Moreland Commission, so we all have to drink. All right, is that it on the letters?
I believe this is it on the letters, yes.
All right, moving on. Local officials in towns downstream from where millions of gallons of mine waste spilled into a southwest Colorado river are demanding answers about possible long-term threats to the water supply. Colorado and New Mexico have declared stretches of the Animas and San Juan rivers to be disaster areas. Now, originally the EPA said 1 million gallons. Now it's 3 million gallons of orange-colored mine waste, included high concentrations of arsenic, lead, and other heavy metals. And there are people there who want some answers out of
and
the
which,
EPA.
And which corporation unleashed this fury on the water?
Corporation?
Yes.
No corporation.
No corporation. The Environmental Protection Agency.
Heads should roll on this one. They should roll on
They
this
must
one.
Roll on
yeah.
this one.
Yeah. yeah. This is terrible. They think this may infect the drinking water of 4 American states.
I find it funny, the reaction. The EPA says, well, you know, the levels of contaminants are much...
Oh, sure.
They're reaching more normal levels now.
Drink your poison.
I'll tell you what, if a corporation did this, they probably would not be singing that tune.
Somebody dumped a quart of motor oil into the water.
The images are stark. I mean, the yellowy river, it's so visible. Well, they're getting rained on terribly in Colorado today, so maybe it'll wash it out more
quickly.
They
had some sort of a hearing, you know, for local people yesterday, and people not only angry, but, you know, women in tears about
and they well should be.
Well, absolutely.
Well should be. Ray, I beg your indulgence, but there was a letter which I didn't read.
Okay.
Which I think I ought to read only because it's a balancing letter.
Okay.
In other words, it's not the same as everybody else's.
Okay. All right.
Dear Roundtable, I'm really conflicted. While I'm sympathetic to the black community, I'm still concerned about my safety in some places right in Albany. The recent gang arrests in Albany and Troy by the AG of New York confirm the real threat these gangsters pose. Improve the economics and family culture, especially right here in Albany. On the other side, my trust in police is in question when a Waterville elite police officer was busted for buying a large amounts of coke on a daily basis. Everything is local. Just putting this out there. Thank you. From David.
All right, David. And the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. So there are those already threatening to sue the EPA over this. And I have a feeling we will hear much more about this in coming days, so we'll put it aside for now.
It's just awful.
Heads will roll, I agree. Yeah.
They have to.
This is one that Alan pointed out. earlier. Let's take a break. It's the roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back in a moment.
Support comes from Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger, fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, and more. AdamsFarms.com. Weston Playhouse presenting the Broadway classic Guys and Dolls. WestonPlayhouse.org for tickets to the show and cabaret. And Albany Marriott with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
Great music for a gray day. It's the roundtable on Tuesday morning. It's a great. Have you been outside? No, you went outside when it was dark.
No, I had an umbrella.
It was very difficult driving up the thruway this morning. Very heavy rain, and those 16-wheelers go blow by you.
But rain is good. Rain is very good. Rain? We need rain.
You know what? That's a
rain is the staff of life.
A cogent point, sir. The email address is roundtable at WAMC.org. It's the roundtable panel on a Trump-free Tuesday. Alan, we have email.
Okay, from our very good friend and occasional colleague, Stuart Shinsky of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Well, all right, Stu.
Yeah, Stu said, hi, Alan. Hi, guys. Schumer 64. Great show. Yep. Catch you soon.
Okay, how about those Mets, Stu?
Stu, you're the interim publisher and you're the editor. You don't have time to listen to us on radio.
I love that guy. I really love him. He's a wonderful man. And let's see. Barbara says, I would like you to discuss more of the issues that Hillary is trying to address, most recently her proposals for making college more affordable and lessening the debt to students and their parents. This is as important as whether people like her or whether Trump is discussed. Please speak more on the issues of importance in regard to the presidential candidates. Thanks, Barbara from Long Meadow.
Okay, well, I think we will. We have certainly a bit of time.
I think you should go now, Barbara. Now. Don't wait another second. Go to WAMC.org and listen to my morning commentary in which I address this in some great length, talking about how, in fact, I went to Hunter, which was for free.
Yeah.
How come we can say to how can we possibly say we'll support pre-K to high school, but not college, which is where we really do segregate people out who can't afford to move ahead in the society. So it isn't as if we don't talk about it. So, put another way, take it back.
Cut it out.
Oh, yeah. No, don't be that way, right, Alan?
Don't be that way.
Okay. All right. And then let's see here. Bernie thanked us for reading his letter.
Oh, you're welcome, Bernie.
Yeah, sure. And Tony says, Schumer just spoke. He believes the Northeast Corridor profits should be cordoned off for track improvements for that corridor. So he'll be talking about a lot of other things besides this now.
And I would imagine if he missed the Sunday press conference last week, he'll make up for it.
Give us a two.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, and Bob says, I disagree with Schumer on Iran, but I want him to be majority leader where he can do great good for New York State. If his no vote makes the difference, I may change my mind, but I don't think it will, and that's Bob. Okay, right. That's it.
Very good. This one was pointed out by one of our panelists, Alan Chartok, this morning. An opinion piece from the Market Watch, and for those of us who don't have much money, this is I'll just host it and I'll let you rich guys talk about it.
But everybody has something in the market,
right? Has the bear market in stocks already begun? What if the bull market in stocks just ended and nobody noticed? That's the ominous new question from Andrew Lapthorne, head of quantitative equity research at Societe Generale, and he has some data on his side. It's not just the recent scary collapse in commodity prices, he says, although that itself often portends an economic slowdown. And it's not just the scary collapse in emerging markets, it's the recent scary collapse in long-term interest rates. It's not even that the bull market, which really began in March 2009, was already looking incredibly long in the tooth. It's the so-called low-quality stocks, which are more sensitive to a downturn, have suddenly started performing badly as well. This is a piece from Brett Arends. And all right, rich guys, go ahead.
Well, the stock market was up over 200 points yesterday after having been down for quite a while.
But the overnights are not good.
Yeah, I mean, this economy is so fragile, just to say the least. And, you know, it doesn't take much for the Wall Street to get spooked. I mean, we see a lot of the downturn in the last week was attributed to companies that had been doing very well, all of a sudden they're not doing as well, such as Apple, and Disney.
You know, but all it takes is one whisper from the rate setters that they may actually raise the rates. It was on this morning, as a matter of fact.
Oh, the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, you know, we can't go forever because there will be inflation. And just because oil prices are down and this and that's down, soon enough, it will go up.
Won't they have to go forever? Because isn't the level of debt so huge that if they raise interest rates, the government won't be able to pay the
government will print more money.
Well, that quantitative ease, but that's a lot of our listeners are very far against that, and fiat currency could be at the root of this problem. Alan.
Huh?
Let me ask you this while you're pondering that great question. With the price of oil down 25% and some predictions that by the end of the summer in some states like Virginia, North Carolina, you're going to see gasoline below $2 a gallon.
Particularly if the Iran deal is passed.
That's right, because that will even cause a glut of oil on top of...
By the way, let me just interrupt and say I don't believe it for a single second.
Which one?
The idea that it'll be below $2. Look, the glut is still there, and the prices went up high this summer. At least they went up, you know, 20, 25 cents, 30 cents. Where did that come from? I want an investigation.
Hmm. Well... Is it good when the price of oil goes down, whether it still hovers above $2 a gallon? You know, we think it is because it's helping my pocket. But in the end, it begins it's not always good, I guess.
That's it's bad for Russia. Yeah. Their economy in trouble. Mm-hmm. China That's having good. Some bubble situation there. So that all sort of plays into this. Are we headed for a worldwide recession, I guess is the question.
Well, this commentary that we're reading from on MarketWatch certainly suggests that things are happening that are beginning to get on the radar screen that are causes for concern. But, you know, that's the way Wall Street is, as Alan says. All you need is, I mean, Apple comes out with like a 47% earnings increase, but they had predicted that Apple would have 48%, right, and their stock went down.
Right. But again, you know, remember when de Blasio ran for mayor of New York, his platform was that there were two New Yorks. And,
yes.
And, you know, when you look at what's going on in this country, you have the stock market at record levels. In some of the retrospectives that have been on, CNN had something on the 70s, and they allude to the Dow Jones average in that period. You know, it was like 1,000 or 2,000.
Right, it was going to go up over 900.
Yeah. So now we're at 18,000.
We're not at 18,000.
Well, it's a little bit less than that.
We're 1,000 points down
is that that big a deal if it's...
Well, but my point is it's up hugely from where it was. But then you have the other segment of this country, probably the majority of this country, who are not as interested in Wall Street because they don't have money in significant amounts invested in it, but who are not doing well because salaries have not increased, because health care has increased. In effect, the message that Bernie Sanders is trying to send, you've got that at the same time as that you've got Wall Street booming, notwithstanding the last week or so.
I don't remember the last article I read on this issue. But you would be surprised at the number of Americans who have money in the market one way or the other, whether it's for pensions.
Well, you make a point.
Well,
sure. All pension plans are tied in one way, the 401ks.
Yeah. But a lot of people aren't watching the market and aren't, you know, so aware from day to day of where their retirement...
That's because a lot of people know they'll never be able to retire.
Well, it's also good for your health. Even those of us who rely on the market so that my retirement becomes comfortable or is still comfortable, if you look at the market every day, you'll drive yourself crazy.
Without question. But I have to say, and I'll probably get severely criticized for
this,
a good deal of there are some real charlatans who ask to invest your money for you.
Mm-hmm.
They engage in things like churning, meaning they sell and buy stocks, which they probably shouldn't be doing. And that's why, a not-for-profit or a semi-not-for-profit has always worked, as far as I'm concerned, with Tia Kreft for all of us college professors and others, because you know that there's a certain amount of integrity there. Somebody will probably
criticize
that.
You know, what's the old line about, if you think if it's a get-rich-quick scheme, stay away from it. You're not going to invest your money long-term in Saratoga Racecourse. You can have fun there for a day, but don't go up to the windows every day expecting your retirement's going to come out.
I think a lot about the other Bernie.
Bernie Sanders.
No.
Bernie Klein, the guy who wrote us the letter. No. Bernie Madoff. Forgot about Bernie Madoff.
Well played.
Yeah.
Email address here is roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Do we have any emails, Alan, before we play Ira's Choice?
Well, Lee said, one of the panelists called Senator Schumer a coward and this morning wants to take back that characterization. Why do editorialists not take as much care in fact-checking as reporters? And how can they be so flippant about the damage done by carelessness? Slanderous remarks, once let loose, are as difficult to take back as toxic spills, about which you also spoke. I don't know that that's
I
not,
didn't fully take
I,
back
no,
that
did,
coward.
No, I didn't think
no,
you
did. We still haven't gotten, and he's still not speaking in front of the cameras to the extent that Schumer is known to be.
Well, the question was whether he was a coward for putting out the statement
right.
at the night of the
right.
Trump
it wasn't
debate.
What, the, what his decision
or
was not
Or whether he
cowardly.
Was strategic.
Well, strategic, coward, But then it turns out it may have been leaked by the administration and not by Senator Schumer,
which
who
would,
is 64,
wouldn't be the first time,
said, right,
by
okay.
the way.
But it's still, but that should not have prevented Schumer from being more upfront about explaining his decision.
Richard says EPA was working to clean up corp mess. Remember GE? Corp messes are all around us. And that's from Richard. And Ken says 2/3 of the country has less than $400 in savings. And then Alice says, dear Roundtable, I question Senator Schumer's loyalty, whether he's the U.S.'s best interest or Israel's. He's elected to represent us in New York and the U.S. When I met with his aides, he was unavailable in Washington to protest the Israeli occupation of Palestine. His aides said they would pass on our concerns, but the senator's mind was made up already, in quotes. I was with a group from New York, 2/3 of which were Jewish. One of our messages was that he should not, I'm reading what you wrote.
Okay, sir. All right.
He should not be afraid of being reelected. If he votes against Israel and holds it accountable for its actions, I believe in Israel's existence, but that should be held, it should be held accountable for its illegal actions. And it's way over the limit, so
okay,
that's all I'm
that's
reading.
Good. That's enough. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, do you have another one?
There's always another one.
Fine.
And then Dean said on the question of sentence, wrong on the 9-year sentence, Roundtable. How many people will die murdered, strangled, supper after this 16-year-old becomes incarcerated, ferocious, and schooled in how to be a real criminal? And that is that.
Okay.
Are you done? Are you,
no,
I mean it goes on and on,
well,
so it's up to you.
I wanted to play Ira's Choice.
Well,
but
play
whichever
Ira's
you
Choice.
Think is
go
more
ahead.
Important.
Okay, now keep reading. If you want to read letters,
No, okay.
Well, I thought of a great segment. We do this every now and again with a select panelist.
Sure.
I'll give four options here. We have 2 minutes. Here's Ira's Choice. You have these choices. Shakespeare may have smoked weed. The universe is slowly dying. Spirituality may be tied to easiest cancer course. Or charges filed against Washington Post reporter who covered Ferguson protests. Ira, what is your choice?
Other than that last one, those other three sort of tie together, don't they? No, I think that the Shakespeare story is funny and fascinating.
All right.
You know, we always think of creative people in the jazz era and musician world sitting around and getting their inspiration from puffing. And now we learn that Shakespeare may have been high on cocaine when he was writing.
Maybe.
Well, they tested 7 or 8 or 9 of his pipes, and apparently there were cannabis residues there.
Yeah. We don't even know who the guy was. How are we testing his pipes?
Well, you know.
We don't even know who he was.
Strangely enough, you make a point.
What do you mean, strangely enough?
Still, it's an interesting article in USA Today and elsewhere. William Shakespeare, perhaps Western literature's most renowned contributor, might have enjoyed an occasional hit of cannabis. Yeah.
I might have flown through this room on a flying pig.
In which case, the rest of us would have been smoking cannabis, clearly. All right, I guess that's it.
Listen, if we saw that movie, Shakespeare in Love, which was, I don't know how realistic it was, but it was very entertaining. And when you watched him writing his scripts, Shakespeare writing his plays, handwritten in the manner of that era, boy, I would light up a joint, too, if I was in.
All right. And on that happy note, we leave you. It's the Roundtable Panel. That's Ira Fussfeld. Mike Spain, thank you, sir. Alan Chartok, okay. And the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back.